It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Gold Derby Show on the Gold Derby Podcast Network. Welcome back to Gold Derby. I'm Christopher Rosen. I'm joined by Joy Zing. Joy, we have so much to talk about. The Being the Ricardos trailer, maybe some Dune, but I want to start with The Last Duel, a movie we both saw independently, but both saw. What you think?
We did see the other Ben Affleck movie together.
We really are on a Ben Affleck streak here. We saw Tender Bar together, sat next to each other. It was great fun. George Clooney was there, the little kid who I've enjoyed. But let. The Last Duel, what did you think? We have rarely talked about this. So what you like?
I enjoyed it, actually. Like, yeah. I think I do like their, like, you know, like it premiered at Venice and like the reviews were like pretty mixed there. And I think that really hurt it. I don't think it should have premiered there. I don't think this is like that type of movie. But anyway, like, you know, the past couple of weeks as like the stateside reviews that like started to come in, like it was almost like a relitigation. It was like people really liked it. And then like people loved Ben in it, you know, which, you know, pleased me, as I'm sure did you. And you know, it's a long movie, but, and I don't like long movies, but I found that it went by pretty quickly. Like it's told in three chapters, as we all know. And I really liked it. Like I thought, you know, the perspectives were well written. Like Jodi is amazing in her final chapter. And I know like she's going lead. And I know some people are like, she should be supporting because she's like barely in the first two, but like, that's the case for all three of them. It's like, they're the lead of their own chapters and they're supporting the other two. And yeah, our boy, Ben, he's mostly, yeah, well, yeah, like he's mainly in Adam's chapter, the middle one, and mostly as like comic relief, but just still great performance, incredible hand acting. And he's just like dunking on Matt the whole time because like his character hates Matt.
So that was a couple of things. So you're exactly right. At Premiere Venice, the reviews are like mixed, but not negative, right? Like it was just like,
yeah. Well, there was one headline. I think it called it like damp mullets or something.
Yeah. And yeah. I think the trailer also led me to believe that it was going to be homework. Certain movies just look like homework, right? Like you're just like, boy, I got to sit through this. And as much as I love Ben and Matt and Adam Driver and Jodie Comer, and Ridley Scott, I was like, this just looks like it could be like a little stiff. And I was so pleasantly surprised that despite the fact that it is about a very serious subject matter and includes some really, really troubling scenes of like violence and sexual assault, there's so much humor in it throughout, right? As well. Like, and that you mentioned, like Ben really does bring the comedy, I would say. He's just playing the biggest douche, basically. Like fully total like hedonist, evil, like just scumbag.
Yeah, like I thought bacchanalia. He's just surrounded by booze and women all the time.
so fun. And his chemistry with Adam Driver is great. And Adam Driver is actually really, I think the trick of the movie is that like, so Matt Damon, you're going to, if you watch the trailers and maybe you think it's like Matt Damon is, you're led to believe is like the hero, but he's so bad. He's like a real jerk and like a total idiot. And the movie makes it very clear almost from the beginning that he's an idiot and is not really smart. And then you have Adam's character who is way more charming and engaging, but is also a terrible abuser and rapist. And so like the movie is really asking you to like watch. It's like asking the audience to do complicated things while you watch, because you're definitely going to be like, wow, Matt sucks. But He's not as bad as Adam, but Adam is more engaging. And it's like, and then you have Jody coming in at the end and ties the whole thing together. And I thought the best part of it is that they save the last duel for the very end. And it is as violent and as just duely as you would expect, right? Like they really are. It was like Knight's Tale, like you said, previously, like, you know, a lot of, and they're just sword fighting and rolling around the mud and a lot of stabbing and blood. And like, I was like, it's so funny because I was like less engaged by that than just by watching Jodie Comer watch them duel, because the movie does such a good job of setting up how she is like at the mercy of these two morons, basically. Right. Like, it's like the way
the message is just like men are idiots.
The message is men are idiots and have always been. And then like, but it's not heavy. I don't think it was heavy handed in that message. And I think it's funny that like, or ironic, I guess, that it's like, oh, like she's basically like, she stands up for herself and like says she was raped, which she obviously was. And they make, the movie doesn't even like mess around with that, which I really like. Like, it's like, even in the chapter told by Adam Driver, it's clearly over the line. And it's even worse when you get to Jody's chapter. But yeah, like she's just put in this position because she has no ownership, like no ownership of her own or destiny, basically, because of the way she's in, and just like have to rely on these dummies. And then at the, like, it's just like, it's really good. I just thought it was like very good. Like you said, it's a little long, but I think you're right because of the pacing of the perspectives of the chapters. I thought it went by pretty quickly. Yeah, I don't know. I would love to see it make a dent in award season, but I just don't think it will. I think Ben has the best shot, but he's not in it enough. Like I think you had mentioned to me offline, but like, he's only got a couple of very funny, good scenes. And I think he could use like one more, maybe.
Yeah. He's like missing. He should have gone to that party that he didn't go to, you know, like he needed like one more to like lock it in. And I kind of felt like he was maybe in the Tender Bar more than this.
Like, I think he was.
Like, they're like spread out more, but yeah, no, he was really funny. And in this, and you know, the category, like as it stands, is kind of like fluid enough that maybe he could get in for one of his two films, but yeah, he was good. And I love that like he and Matt play like versions of like your classic masshole in this.
Yes, the movie's very modern, I think, and that's another thing that maybe you wouldn't get from the trailer. It's like they talk, everybody speaks,
they don't even try accents. Like Harry Walter did not try at all.
None. There's no accents. It's just as like they're talking like regular people, and they're not just talking without accents, but even they're like what they're saying and how they're saying it is so modern. Like there's a scene in the middle section when Matt has like a tantrum basically in front of Ben. And he's like, it is like very funny. It is just a very funny, like a male having a temper tantrum, an adult male having a temper tantrum.
Yeah. And I really like Matt a lot. And I feel like he's like, he had the hardest part because he had to modulate the most between like all three, because like he like views himself as this like righteous hero in his own mind, you know. And then like in Adam's, it's like they start to become enemies because like Adam starts getting more like ingratiated under like Ben's wing, and then you know, so like he like, so like you see more of like Matt's petulance in there. And
that's
then
the
in
word,
Jody's,
petulant.
like in Jody's, it's like, you know, he is not this like loving, caring husband that he views himself to be. Like, he doesn't care. Like,
right.
Like, believe that she was raped. And then he's just like, I'm going to Paris and I'm going to Scotland like every 2 days.
It's very funny. And that's another reason. So unsaid here so far is that the movie is really flopped with audiences, which
it like barely cracked like 5 million.
I can't say I'm super surprised, just because like, based on how the box office has gone since like people have started going back to the theaters during the pandemic, it's like superhero movies and like movies geared for like young adults, I would say. So like Venom was like the biggest thing. And I feel like Venom skews really young. Bond was not the biggest thing, even though it did well.
It's about IP.
Right. It's about IP, but I think it's about different. It's like young IPs. Like Halloween Kills was like,
This is a medieval adult drama.
Right. So it's like, no one's going to see this. Though I would say like I don't want to speak for you, but one of the reasons like neither one of us could go to the press screenings that we're invited to. But I was like, I want to see this in the theater because I know it's long. And I just feel like if I'm sitting here at home, I'm going to be too distracted and I'm not going to really focus on it. So I wanted to see it in the theater. I still think it'll play well for people who end up catching it like in a few weeks on HBO Max or wherever it lands. I'm sure. I think the Fox studio, this is a leftover from 20th Century Fox released by Disney. I think those end up on HBO Max eventually because of like a pre-existing deal, but I'm sure it'll be on VOD sooner than that. So you could like rent it in the next month or so. Yeah. So it definitely flopped. And I think that'll end up hurting it from like an award standpoint. I just feel like people are going to just kind of forget about it. And that's a shame because I think Jodie is really great also, like you were saying. And I think she could, I had no problem with her thinking of her as the lead. She's in enough of the Matt one. And she has obviously the dominance of the last third of the movie. And that felt like to me, like, yeah, she's the lead of the movie.
And I feel like we've talked about this before, and like the messaging and the optics would just be like wrong almost if,
oh yeah,
you put her in supporting, you know, like this is about like a woman trying to have agency,
right? Like, agency is the right word. And she did not. Yeah. So put her in supporting would just be such a bad look. And I actually thought, like you're saying, like, I thought Matt was incredibly good. It might be my favorite Matt Damon performance.
Wait, how did you describe him yesterday?
Let me look. I'm going to look back and see how he did. Do you remember? I'm trying to see. I look live. You're like,
he's really good at playing.
He's really good at playing terrible.
Guy who thinks he's good, but it's like actually an asshole.
That's it. Matt is great when he gets to play the total asshole who thinks he's good. Yes. That's exactly right. And I think you've seen that if I was making a list of his best performances, it would be like Good Will Hunting and Departed or at like the top.
Iconic.
And I think both of those
robbed for the Departed.
Totally robbed. And both of those are Matt is playing the hero in his own mind. And in Good Will Hunting, he is the hero, but he's still like the hero.
He's
in his own
mind. Just like this young, like egotistical, like 20-year-old, right. You know,
and Departed, he definitely thinks he's like trying. He's like doing the best he can, even though he's clearly like the villain. And in this movie, it's literally played out. So one of the other things I found really fun about, and I was like, not surprised, not to denigrate like mainstream audiences, but I'm like, the humor of this movie is really subtle because it's like you said, like we're going back through the different perspectives. So it opens with like Matt they're like on a hill and there's like a bunch of like, I don't even know who they're fighting. Honestly, maybe this is a problem with the movie, but I was like,
we failed history,
whatever it is, they're fighting bad guys they're just fighting somebody else, another army. And the other army is like killing a bunch of innocent civilians. And Matt's like for England or whatever. And he like runs or for France. It doesn't matter. He just runs down the hill. Like
for the king,
for the king. He runs down the hill. He's like the lone man. I alone can fix this. And everybody follows him. And it's like a big hero moment. And then like an hour later, you get the Adam Driver version of it, which is probably the realer version of it. And Matt is baited into this like situation because he's just an idiot. And it's just so funny. I was like laughing out loud in the theater.
Yeah, you really need to like remember things.
But you really do need to remember things. And Ridley Scott is such a, I would call him like a subtle filmmaker in that he's like not like hammering the stuff you need to pay attention to home. Like, especially in the beginning, they're just kind of like, it's just moving through time. And it's like, he just trusts that the audience is going to understand this and get it and keep up and remember things. He's like making a movie that's, again, like, it feels like a movie they used to make, because I think audiences now are maybe conditioned to have things a little more spelled out and the way it's paced.
Oh yeah. Stuff. A lot of exposition.
And there's no exposition. It's really, and it's like, you just need to like pay attention. And then it's really funny later on when those like jokes pay off in like just a little interactions. Like you said, they show the same, I think they show the same scene of Matt and Adam meeting, like they have like a falling out and then they later meet. And this is like a key moment because it's when Adam first sees Marguerite, played by Jodie Comer, and it like sets in motion the terrible events of like the movie that sets up the end. And they show that scene like three different times and each time it's different. And it's like,
yeah, because like Matt asks her to like greet Adam with a kiss.
Right.
And the kiss is like completely differently all three times,
which is really great. And then even the Matt and Adam hello and handshake is different all three times. And like and it's so subtle and it doesn't like, it's just very funny. And I found that like that kind of stuff like really brought a humor to it or like an engagement to it that I was not expecting. And I think if you're just like if you're just not paying attention to it or like checking your phone or whatever, you're just going to miss these things because they're so subtle. Like, and it's just really good. So I, in a different time, I think this would have been like a major Oscar movie, maybe like 20 years ago.
Yeah. It feels like very 90s. And, you know, like, I mean, even if like, you know, COVID did not exist, like, I don't really know how well this would have done. Right. Like normally, like, I think like the reported budget is like 100 million, but I don't know right. if it was like even hitting like 50, you know, normally. I don't know.
And
I think it would need like people, like the right people to see it. Like, I think it can survive in that, you know, if like voters are watching it and like are really taking to it. And, you know, it does have a lot of, it's very crafts heavy, obviously. So that's potential there. I did not put any of them in, although I would love to see Jodie get nominated. I'm like torn about Ben because I do want to put him in for something between like this and Tender Bar, but I don't know.
So we
should talk about Tender Bar though, because we have a personal gripe with it.
So we saw Tender Bar last week after we had recorded. So we wrote about it, I think, on Friday a little bit. So we saw it. So I still have Ben in for Tender Bar, and I actually have him still winning at this point for Tender Bar. My thinking was at the time when seeing Tender Bar and then assuming Last Duel based on like the response to his performance, and then now being confirmed by that, is that he's so fun in The Last Duel, and I think people really get a kick out of him in that, but it's not a big enough performance. And it's not the, like, it's probably like the third or fourth best performance in the movie, I'd argue, even though he's great in it. And I think Tender Bar, it's like, he's not a lead, but he's clearly like the best thing in the movie. And it's like a very likable character. So those two things put together lead me to believe that Tender Bar would leap ahead, and especially because it's like an Amazon movie and they have like, they're going to probably campaign it pretty heavily. They're already screening it, obviously. So they're pretty confident in it, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why I have him in, and I have him winning because the category is not loaded with a lot of heft. So I think like, if there is a narrative that emerges from this category, it could be like, Ben deserves an acting Oscar. He's never been nominated. Why has that? He's like a great movie star, and he's got like two great roles this year. Like, is this time to give Ben Affleck an Oscar for acting? That's my rationale. But the movie Tender Bar, Joyce, you and I both from Long Island. Did you grow up on Long Island?
Yeah, like most of my childhood. We moved there when I was 11. So
I grew up there. I actually grew up in the town over from where Tender Bar takes place.
I think we're each like 3 miles out of that town, but in opposite directions.
Correct. Yeah. So very close.
Yeah. I've frequented Manhasset a lot, especially the train station.
100%. Driven through Manhasset 100 times, gone to the movie theater there, the three screen.
The little one.
Still open somehow. Great for them. One of the first movie memories I have is seeing Muppets Take Manhattan with my mother. And I think we saw it in that Manhasset theater. I feel like I also saw Return of the Jedi in that Manhasset theater. So those are like early formative experiences for me as a moviegoer. And this movie takes place in Manhasset, but it's shot in Boston. And so clearly in Boston.
So clearly shot in Boston. But and it does not resemble Long Island at all.
Not at all. Nobody mentions a diner once. No LIE mentions. They talk about.
I was waiting. I was like, are they going to show the LIRR? And like, thank God they don't.
Nothing at all. And again, for an average audience and for a regular person who's not a Long Island resident like us, I think nobody will care. And I think George Clooney directed the movie. I think I liked it a little more than you. It's like totally, I think it'll be pretty watchable. And I think people will come out of it like feeling good because it's like a feel good thing. And I think George Clooney reacted to it because of the sense of like family and like how he had said after the screening, how it's like very undivisive and like how important family is, and especially like extended family and like the family people make and all this stuff. So like, I think that was his angle, but from a Long Island perspective, it's a huge swing and a miss. Just like, I wish they would have said it like, in Boston.
Yeah. Like I actually wouldn't have any problem with that. If like, even knowing that like the true story was set in Manhasset, like if they had just decided to relocate it to Boston, I would have been fine. I don't care.
Totally.
Like, and I knew they shot it in Boston. So like, And I hadn't known it was set on Long Island until like 2 months ago. I was expecting like a Boston bar, and like, even like the houses, like that's not a Manhattan neighborhood.
Exactly. Right. I don't know what those kind of houses are called, but they're so obviously Boston because we've seen them mm-hmm. in Departed, Good Will Hunting, like every yeah. Boston movie.
It's just like, so like classic old school, like Boston.
Right. And like those, that's just not how houses look on Long Island. I think what George Clooney said after the movie, we saw it at the DGA. So it was like a more of a filmmaker kind of conversation, but he said that, the landscape of the movie takes place in like the '70s and the '80s, and that Manhasset doesn't look, Long Island just has been too built up to replicate that feeling. And a lot of the Massachusetts homes are just a little older, and like the neighborhoods are different. And I get that because like, I still go home to that town and like to see my family and stuff. And it does look a little more built up. It certainly doesn't look like 1978 or 1980, but I was just like, you could just set this thing in Boston. I don't know. Yeah. And nobody will care about this. I'll tell you one part. We didn't even talk about this. This part I was like, and again, maybe it was in the book, and I'm assuming a lot of it was. It's based on a memoir by, I forget the, J.R.
Moringer.
Right, J.R. Moringer. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, and he wrote this great book. And it's been in development for over a decade. So it's like a very, you know, William Monahan wrote the script from Departed. So it's like a big thing. And I was just like, oh, at one point in the movie, the lead JR is the character is played by Ty Sheridan. Really, I thought really quite good. I've never really warmed to him super much. I mean, like I know him maybe from, I guess, was he in Take Shelter? Which he was in something like that. I'll check. Yeah. And he was in the X-Men movies. But anyway, he's talking to his mother and she's like, oh, I got a job out in West Hampton, I think she says. And it's like, and they just kind of talk about it like it's like down the street. And I'm like, that from Manhasset would take you like 3 hours on the LIE or have to take like a 2-hour train every day. And it's just not mentioned with any kind of like surprise. Yeah.
And then like urgency. When he's like driving at one point in the movie, I'm like, that's not the way you take into the city.
Correct. So not to derail this too much, but those are our Long Island nitpicks.
I just want to mention that. Yeah. Like Clooney said, like they couldn't like turn it, you know, turn back time basically. But
right.
I'm like, you could put up a couple storefronts. It's fine. But I will just say that if you recall in The Irishman, the diner that in which they watched, they got the news of JFK's assassination.
Yeah.
That was also filmed on Long Island because a high school classmate of mine, her grandparents owned that diner. It's actually like 60s era, like ice cream shops called Hildebrand's, like in Williston Park. And so they didn't have to like do much dressing there. Yeah. So, but they did like, you know, change the storefronts, like the exterior, like of the neighboring establishments. It's like, you can do that.
to give credit, it was shot during COVID. So I'm like, maybe
it's true.
Different but times.
I know. And I know it's a smaller budget, but.
Right. Yeah. The movie itself, like I said, I think Ben is great in it. I loved him in it so much. It's in the press. They're already like George, he did interviews like before it came out. You know, like I think they screened in LA and whatever. And they're already like running with, this is like the best role that Ben has ever had. And
or like, this is not the typical role he gets.
And not the typical role. And I was like, at first I was like, when I see that kind of hyperbole, I'm like, no way. And then I was like really thinking about it. And I'm like, he's probably not necessarily wrong. I was like, Ben as a performer is usually, if he's a lead in the movie, it's going to be like, he's always like shaded a little bit, right? Like Gone Girl, he's not like a hero, right? And like even The Way Back, where he's in, it's a heroic like redemption movie, he's still got to be redeemed. And you know, a lot of his stuff is like that. And this movie, I felt like, you know, he's like just like a good dude throughout. There's not a lot of like contradictions or complications with this guy. He's like a pretty straightforward guy, and I think he's like really good. And the other thing I was really impressed with is that he's got a lot of his performance is opposite Daniel Ranieri, I believe is the young actor's name, who George Clooney found because he was a Brooklyn child who went viral during the coronavirus, early stages of the coronavirus, because he was like swearing like Joe Pesci in Goodfellas to talk about the lockdown. He's like, this effing lockdown, you know, that kind of thing. And he was on like Jimmy Kimmel and stuff. And so he plays like the kid, super charming kid.
And Kimmel hooked him up. They connected him.
And I was like, Ben's really acting like not caring. Cause I like, I'll give the kid credit because he's like, but it's like, he's playing opposite this boy who's not an actor or it's his first performance. And like, it's so natural and like really good. And I was just like, I think actors should get credit when they have to do like a little more heavy lifting like that beyond their own performance. Like Ben is bringing that performance out of that kid. And a lot of his scenes are with that kid. And so like, I was in on it. I don't know. I think that there's a really compelling case for him to get in for it.
Yeah. I feel like the movie, like I can't see any other right now, like potential nominations for that movie. Like he would be the sole nominee for that film. And
so I'd argue,
like, what else would you nominate it for?
Well, what about, I mean, like adapted screenplay, and this is for both of these Ben movies, for The Last Duel and for Tender Bar, is adapted screenplay actually strong? And is there room in it for two former Oscar winners then in William Monahan for Tender Bar and Matt and Ben and Nicole Holofcener for Last Duel? It's possible they could all get nominated. Both those scripts could get nominated. I was looking at it now. I have one of them in, but right now my nominees would be like Power of the Dog, Jane Campion, right? She won. Lost Daughter, I have pretty high because I think the Maggie Gyllenhaal script is going to get like a lot of buzz and interest. And then I have Coda, which I think people maybe don't realize is adapted because it's a remake. And then I have Passing, which is maybe like a Hope Diction for Rebecca Hall, because thinking again, she's an actress or whatever. And then Tender Bar, the other contenders are Nightmare Alley, which remains to be seen how good it is and if people like it. The Tragedy of Macbeth, which I think you've mentioned previously, like Shakespeare movies actually don't get a lot of adaptations, don't mm-hmm. really get nominated. And House of Gucci, which people are like, you know, who knows? I don't know. It could be great. It could not. We'll see. The other big contenders are like The Humans, Dune, Tick, Tick, Boom, West Side Story. I mean, I don't know. There's like movies there that could really pop, but what if both of them get in? I was like, William Monahan wrote this script. Like,
I don't think both of them are going to get in. The thing is, it's like, you know, I don't think like the box office is like the end all be all, especially in like COVID, but like, you know, like 4.8 million is still really bad.
I understand. That's not. Yeah.
I mostly see it as just like a Ben play and, you know, supporting, especially in like the preferential ballot era, like it really favors like, people in Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
You know, like coattails basically. Mm-hmm. And like the last one to win without, as a sole nominee was Christopher Plummer. And right. He had like a whole narrative going, and that also got like the reviews, and it was like playing everywhere. Like,
sure.
So, you know, I don't think Ben Affleck is Christopher Plummer.
No, I don't think so either. So,
I would love to have him in there, but I don't know. Maybe I could just put him in for fun now, but.
Well, I have him in, because I see what you're saying, but that's why I have Tender Bar getting in for script. I just think that it could get another one. I also was like, I don't know. I think, this is like maybe like way overthinking, but that's what we do, right? I mean, like obviously, certainly I am a big fan of this, but I was like, oh, people really do like George Clooney. And like you and I at the Q&A after, he was the best part of the experience, I would say, right? Like he's so funny.
He's a total pro. Like he knows like exactly what to do and say in like every situation.
Incredibly charming, able to like pitch his bits and like comedy to like the room. So this was at the DGA theater, like I mentioned, and like he was talking mostly to like in theory filmmakers or whoever was there, and was very kind of filmmaker focused. I saw he did another Q&A in LA, and it was like more writer focused, I think, or you know, it's like the guy is like, he's just a absolute pro, and I'm like, to have him out there with this movie and the movie being like I would say certainly better than Midnight Sky. No offense to Midnight Sky. I don't know. I feel like there's like an embrace potential for the Clooney of it and the movie. And then that would like kind of lend itself to Ben. And then you have to think like the last time these guys teamed up was Argo, right? Like, I mean, obviously Clooney wasn't direct in it, but he produced it with Ben. And so I'm like, this is like the first time Ben has gotten back with George. Maybe that's like a good luck thing. I don't know. I'm just like,
I mean, maybe, but it's also funny because like, you know, in like the 2000s until like through Argo, like George was like really killing it at Oscars. He was getting nominated like every 2 years, you know? And then we like the next year was Gravity. And then it was like, oh, could he get into like supporting for like Gravity? He didn't. And he hasn't been nominated since. And yeah, I mean, he has stopped or like he's acted less since then, like mostly doing directing. Less.
Yeah, for sure.
Mostly directed and like his films haven't really been all that great or done that well in the past decade. So yeah, I don't know. Like this movie doesn't come out until December, right?
It doesn't come out until like December
10th or
I think it's December 10th or 17th. And then it's actually got a month of theatrical exclusivity because I think it's not on Amazon itself until January 17th. Yeah. So clearly George. And he mentioned this in the thing. I mean, this was like a movie that I think he wanted people to see in the theater and was like bemoaning a little bit the fact that like you can't actually even make this kind of movie at a studio anymore. Because like if he was like, if I took it to Warner Brothers, it's like going to cost them, even if the movie costs like 10 million, which I think it costs like 10 or 12 million. It's not a very expensive movie. He's like the marketing is like 50 million or, it, you know, they're just, and the amount of money they have to make it back is impossible. This movie would never make 100 million. Even 10 years ago, this movie wouldn't have made, you know what I mean? Like the tender bar is like a 35 to 45. If this was like a vintage movie going
it's like a mid-range adult drama.
Right. It's like, that's not going to make 100 million. I don't think so. Yeah. So he got Amazon brought it to him and like, whatever. I mean, you look at his last few directing. Yeah. Monuments since Argo or producing since Argo. It's like, I mean, Monuments Man and Suburbicon are his two directed ones before Midnight Sky and this. Neither one of them were very well received.
Yeah.
And then so. He's his producer since Argo. It's like he was a producer on August Osage County, Our Brand is Crisis, Money Monster, which he actually was in. And then he did a bunch of TV. And now we're back with this. So, I mean, he really hasn't done a lot of the stuff that would have been like Oscar nominated. So, I mean, maybe this is the year for George. And then by virtue of that, Ben, I don't know. It's a great time if you like movie stars from like the 90s and 2000s, this is a great season.
This is like my favorite time. like take me back to my youth. So yeah. So I mixed up like the Tender Bars and Amazon's other release date, movies release date, being the Ricardos. Cause that's great. Coming out.
Great segue.
Yeah.
Let's talk being the Ricardos. So, for a while, I think we were talking about this actually literally at the Tender Bar screening.
Yeah, because I was saying like, there's been like nothing about this movie.
When is the movie going to get, when are we
like
going to
a release date, like a photo?
And we got it all yesterday on Tuesday from Amazon. So it comes out, I think, December 10th, I believe, right?
Yeah, December 10th. And then
it's on Amazon.
On the 21st, December
21st. So right away on Amazon, kind of like the Netflix model for this one. Sorkin right back in it, right after like pulling a David O. Russell. He did Chicago 7 and then like 11, 13 or 14 months later, we're back with.
Shot it this spring.
Yeah.
Just like a quick post-production.
We're back with being the Ricardos. The trailer, very much a teaser trailer, I'd say. It's not even 2 minutes.
You don't see her.
You see her enough that I was able to get a screen grab of her in the famous episode of I Love Lucy. Nicole Kidman plays Lucille Ball. And in the famous episode, when she's stomping the grapes. I can't say I've ever watched a lot of I Love Lucy. I don't know about yourself.
I watched it a lot when I was a kid, when it was on Nick at Night. And I don't have a middle name. So I used to tell people that my middle name was Lucy.
That's awesome. So that's really good.
But now I'm so glad I don't have a middle name because like less things to fill out.
On exactly. So you see a little bit of Nicole Kidman as Lucille Ball, you hear her in a voiceover doing like an accent, not really, you know, I mean, she just doesn't have her Australian accent at the very least. The trailer shows a lot of Javier Bardem plays Desi Arnaz. And then you see glimpses of the rest of the cast. J.K. Simmons is in it. I think Jake Lacey is in it and Aaliyah Shawkat is in it and Tony Hale is in it. It definitely is more of a, so basically the movie takes place over a week of production in I Love Lucy. And it's kind of like, it seemingly is like a classic Sorkin, just like doing backstage stuff, running around, keeping things in the bottled up. So it's like a lot of, he did an interview with Entertainment Weekly for it, for their trailer debut. And he basically was like, all these things that are in the movie, all the obstacles that Lucy and Desi face happened just not in the same week. So it's like, she's getting investigated for alleged ties to communism. And there's a tabloid article about Desi Arnaz's, you know, night out on the town. And then they're doing this very complicated episode and the production of that and all these things come to a head. It just feels like classic Sorkin. And I guess the best case of it is like a West Wing episode when there's like, you know, four or five different stories that they're juggling and it's great.
Yeah. It's like sort of like a bottle episode.
And the worst case would be if it's like Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. So hopefully it's much more of West Wing, I think, or any of his other movies. Like we talked a lot. I loved Chicago 7. I'm very excited for it. I think I'm just in on it. I love Sorkin, so I'm in. That's basically my thoughts.
I mean, I feel like the teaser did its job and I understand why they like withheld like showing Nicole. Cause you know, like the internet, like dragged them to bits when like those like pap photos came out of like her like in character. And then like, you know, some site was like, oh, she is like, she looks like she's like uncanny as like Lucille Ball. And everyone's like, no, you know? Right. So, and yeah, but I don't know. I can't decide if like they would have been better off like showing more of her. Like I know like a real trailer is going to drop probably in like, you know, 3 weeks or something.
Right.
But yeah, like Lucy and Desi's daughter, also named Lucy, she did an interview somewhere. I don't know. Maybe even just like on her Instagram page because she's been talking a lot about this movie. But she said like she was glad that they didn't go for direct like imitations of her mm-hmm. parents. And like, she's glad they don't look exactly like Javier Bardem's Desi. Like she's glad they don't look exactly like them. And like, they don't sound exactly like them, but she was like really pleased with the performances. And she's like, they really captured my parents and like blah, blah, blah. So it's like, you know, as long as she's happy, like,
yeah.
That's cool. You know?
And I'm also like with me, I don't know about like, I'm okay to suspend disbelief enough to be like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Not an SNL sketch, right? You don't have to like be like impersonating them. And I guess if you capture the essence of the person, that's like more important, I guess. So I don't know about you. Obviously we haven't seen it. So like, I'm not going to like move it around based on like a 90 second teaser trailer, but I'm like, this has the potential to be a massive contender, right? Like, it's like, I don't have it in anything right now.
It could get like makeup and stuff too, like some below the line stuff. And like, you know, I don't like with like the globes, I think like they can nominate. Like I'm ready to like put her into SAG because they nominate her for like a Bombshell, and so, they love like transformations. Even though this is not like a full transformation, but yeah, like I agree. Like I don't need someone to look exactly like the famous person they're playing. Like, and I think a lot of people mistake that as like great acting, and it's just like that's just makeup and prosthetics.
So best actress for Nicole. Again, the movie seems like very much focused on her. I don't know what they're going to do with, like, I'm assuming, I have no idea, but I'm assuming Javier Bardem would be the lead, right? A lead actor, and she'd be lead actress.
He's
sure.
Like, well, in the teaser, like they're both top billed and he was first, but then on the poster, she's first. So it could just be a contractual thing.
Sure. Sure. So for best actress, we have this is my list right now. Jessica Chastain for Eyes of Tammy Faye, Olivia Colman for Lost Daughter, Kristen Stewart for Spencer, Penelope Cruz for Parallel Mothers, and Jennifer Hudson for Respect. There's definitely room in there for Nicole Kidman. Like, absolutely. Like, I could see her getting in. You're right. I mean, and she's like a past winner, transforming into like one of the most famous icons in Hollywood history. And like, it just feels like it checks a lot of boxes to get in. Unless people are like, wow, it's really not good. But assuming that it's good.
Yeah. And I think like people also like ready for it to not be good, you know?
True.
So, and I think like, if it is good, like that can help it. Cause it's just like, oh, it exceeded your expectations.
Right. Everybody will be like, wow, you know, it was great being the Ricardos and there she is. I mean, best picture with 10 nominees. I think it's in play because like, I think when you get to the bottom of best picture at the moment, it's not very set.
Yeah. With like a lock 10, like there's if not, it wasn't a lock 10, I'll be like, I don't know, but if it works, like I can see it.
It's a movie about Hollywood. Like that's always a thing that people love, right? Like a backstage Hollywood drama. I mean, I could easily get in. I don't think Sorkin, based on like the amount of best director candidates, like we've discussed, like it's pretty heavy hitters this year. I think more so than last year. He didn't even get in last year for Chicago 7. So it seems like a longer shot for him to get in this year, but screenplay. I mean, again, you're going to count Aaron Sorkin out in screenplay.
What if this is like another Steve Jobs situation where it just gets like actor nominations and like he wins the Globe for screenplay, but doesn't get nominated.
Possible, you know, and then I would say the supporting actor, he's in the trailer very briefly, but J.K. Simmons plays the actor who played Fred on I Love Lucy, who I think.
Yeah. William Raleigh. Yeah.
And past winner, J.K. Simmons, if he has any kind of significant role, why not J.K. Simmons and the best supporting actor? Like we said, it's pretty wide open at this point. I could see this getting like a lot of it's very possible that it can get a lot of nominations if it's good. And if it's as good as Chicago 7 was in my calculus, I would say it could get like 5 or 6, 7 nominations just based on like who's involved and like the subject matter and the below the line is, like you said, like hair and makeup. It seemingly would compete there, right? Like, cause you know, you're transforming Nicole Kidman to at least plausibly look like Lucille Ball. I don't know.
And I don't like the best actress contenders. Like, I feel like they're in more like artsy films, you know, like Spencer, you know, like it's maybe like a little bit more like highbrow. And you said, you know, like you can see it being divisive because that woman behind you, Telluride, hated it.
That one lady, but yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have like Tragedy of Macbeth, and it's like some people might not like take to Shakespeare. And even something like The Lost Daughter, even though like, you know, people do seem to like it once they've seen it.
It is definitely more of an indie small movie.
Yeah. Whereas I think, you know, like this movie and like the type of performance Nicole is giving, or like the role, is more in the vein of like a Jessica Chastain, you know, like famous person transformation, although Jessica is transforming way more than Nicole. Right. Is. So yeah, I could see like that, like segment of like voters like gravitating towards like Nicole if they're not really into like the art housey type of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's an easier, like I'll just use like if I'm talking to my parents who are like older, it'd be easier sell for me to say Nicole Kidman plays that Lucille Ball in a movie versus
or like a J Hud as like Aretha Franklin, you know,
versus like Kristen Stewart's Princess Diana, but it's like really arty, or like Olivia Colman plays like this character in this
and she's like stalking Dakota Johnson.
And it's like, like it's an easier sell and like a much easier elevator pitch to be like Nicole Kidman, Lucille Ball, Darren Sorkin did it. Great. You know, it's like, I think people will react to that. So I guess it just depends. I mean, I'll be curious to see when they start screening it and like what the response is. I don't think people have, I haven't talked to really anybody who's seen it personally. I don't know about you.
I feel like they're probably still just like finishing it.
Right.
Like literally started filming in like the end of March.
Yeah. Pretty wild that it's already here, but I'm excited.
He's working fast, just like Clint.
Yeah, he is. He's turning into Clint. I will say I love Steve Jobs, and you're right. It would remind me of that, especially the way he kind of like bottled the story. So Steve Jobs obviously takes place over like 3 Apple events. And this is seemingly takes place over a week. I love when Sorkin does that. I love when he like kind of like ties something off and is just like, here's like a little pressure cooker of a thing. And we're going to tell a story in this inside this world that I've like kind of manipulated.
And also Fassbender did not look exactly like Steve Jobs.
No. And he ruled in it. He was so good. That's one of my bigger disappointments from Oscar snubbings. I think the whole thing was good. Seth Rogen ruled. He was so good. And who got nominated? Who else?
Kate was nominated.
And that was it? Or who else? Was Fassbender?
Yeah, Fassbender was nominated.
and Kate and no Seth.
No Seth.
Seth should have gotten nominated. He was really good.
I think he was in a lot of people's like early predictions, but then like the movie just didn't take off at all. Like it literally only got those two acting nominations. So.
Such a bummer. I know people who don't like it, but I really did like it. I rewatched it last year because they did a whole bunch of Sorkin rewatches to get ready for Chicago 7. So it's kind of fresh in my mind.
So you just binged all his movies?
Yeah. Well, I watched Malice is his first one that he wrote. Right. Mm-hmm. I think. And that movie's great. And he reunites with Malice star Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. For being like almost like 30 years later.
And obviously like Social Network, I've seen like a million times. I'm excited for this. And I'm like very, it was nice to see it coming in hot here as like one of the last big movies, I guess, you know. I'm like the next one. I feel like we've gotten a Nightmare Alley trailer. I feel like we need another House of Gucci marketing push here in a little bit. I'm assuming they were waiting.
I mean, come out in a month.
Yeah. I'm assuming they were waiting until after Last Duel to like get that out of the way. And then
with Adam
and with Ridley, right? Like both of them. I feel like neither one of them did a lot of press for mostly all the press I saw for Last Duel was Nicole, Matt and Ben. Nicole Holofcener, Matt and Ben, and Joey.
Yeah. I mean, like really did like some, I feel like print interviews, but like Adam did like nothing.
Right. Which I mean, makes sense because he's really, he would say he's a supporting actor from it even. Mm-hmm. And he's great. I would like, again, it's not, he was so good in it though. I just love Adam Driver. I think I'm a big Adam Driver fan, not as much as a big Ben Affleck fan, but big.
I do like his or like his character's like a wardrobe transformation as he just like, you know, came under like Ben's thumb. Like he started dressing more in like gold.
Yeah, very fun. Very, very fun. Joyce, before we head out, two things coming out this week that I just want to touch on quickly. Dune and Dune and French Dispatch are both out. I think French Dispatch in limited release and Dune obviously in much wider release and will be on HBO Max as well. I could see, we've talked about Dune a lot. I really enjoyed it. It's so good. And I think it's going to like clean up in the tech categories. I have it like nominated or winning in a bunch of them at the moment. I just think it's like rocketing towards that. And the reviews have remained pretty consistent, which I say is like a credit to the movie because like it premiered at Venice. And like, I think a lot of the earlier reviews from like those first screenings were very strong. And I think there's always like a little bit of like, should we take these with a grain of salt because of people seeing them at festivals and then also like getting to see things first. And like, you know, there's,
and
like
also so many people wanted to see this movie for over a year.
There's like, maybe like, are those reviews legitimate? Right. Like, you know, not to be too cynical, but like, there's a lot of play beyond just the review, right? Like it's not just about the movie. It's about like whatever, everything else. But then like, as people have seen it at New York Film Festival, I think like with those expectations that were set by the early reviews in September, they've continued to be really strong. I've seen like a lot of people really like it. I'll be curious to see how it does. I have no, like, again, like who cares about the box office, but I literally have no idea. I could see it doing well or flopping because like it's on TV also, but it's, I think you should see it in the theater if you can. It's really good. And then French Dispatch, again, another movie that I feel like people have been waiting for like 2 years. It was supposed to be at Cannes last year before it was canceled because of the coronavirus pandemic, has been screening at festivals. It was at Cannes this year, I believe. That was its first one. And it kind of made its way through New York. And I don't know if it was a TIFF, but it was definitely a Telluride, you know, classic Wes Anderson stuff. I could see it doing well below the line. Alexander Desplat, our boy, getting in there again, maybe for score, maybe a Wes screenplay nom. I've seen it. I'd say due to the fact that it's very ensemble and like episodic, like an anthology, none of the actors pop, but I've seen people like kind of like do a little nascent Jeffrey Wright cheerleading. He's good in it, but I don't see it personally because I just don't think he's in it very much.
I feel like both these movies were supposed to come out last year. And I feel like in like the 18 months since, like, or a little over a year since, the anticipation for Dune has only gotten bigger, whereas or maybe it's just kind of like plateaued with like French Dispatch. I don't know if it's gone lower, but I don't feel like it's like the same type of like buzz and energy around it.
It's weird.
And I don't even know if that's the type of the movie itself, but I feel like last year, you know, before March, like Aaron was just like, oh, French Dispatch in July, you know, like when like the little like bits and like the teasers were coming out, like everyone was looking forward to it. And like now it's just like Dune is finally here, you know?
Well, the other thing is like, think about it. Like, again, the world is totally different, but you're right. Like French Dispatch was supposed to release in July of 2020 in that like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood spot. And I doubt it would have never made like $200 million at the box office, but it was definitely like being programmed as here's a movie for adults in the middle of like summer silly season with like a bunch of like superhero movies and like whatever.
Like right after Tenet.
Right. And it's like, you know, like people are going to watch this and be like, oh, this is great. It's such like a relief from having to watch all these blockbusters. And now it's being released in October with maybe like different set of expectations or what you're thinking you're going to get at the movie theater. And that's not the movie's fault. It just is what it is, what it is. I do think it's like a little weirdly muted for a Wes Anderson movie, but I'm like, I've been rewatching his movies as well. The guy, I love his movies. He's great. And like, he just is like very creative. He's already moved on to the next one. I think he's shooting it now. I'll be curious to see. I think I've seen mixed reviews for it. Some people really like it. Some people don't. I don't know. I don't think it's I would be surprised if it ends up like a serious best picture contender a la Grand Budapest and Moonrise Kingdom to an extent. Right. I didn't know Moonrise Kingdom wasn't nominated, but I mean, I don't think it'll be in that conversation, but you never know. I mean, like we said, there's 10 nominees. So if everything kind of like, if the later movies start falling off, I think you're going to come back to movies like French Dispatch and be like, well, maybe that actually
you need, you need filler nominees.
I mean, not to denigrate it as filler nominees, but like, you know, I mean, I think like right now people are probably mentally like, well, I'm holding spots for Don't Look Up and West Side Story and Licorice Pizza and, you know, Nightmare Alley and all these movies that nobody really seen. House of Gucci. That's like five right there that haven't screened that are like really popular best picture contenders probably. But if all five of them are not good or.
I completely agree. Yeah. Right,
it's like, you're going to go back and be like, let me give French Dispatch another shot. At least I know that was good. You know, like I like that enough. So that'll be interesting. Are you going to see either of these, Joyce? Are you going to go to the theater to see these?
I don't need to see a movie in a theater.
Right.
Personally. We've talked about this. Yeah, we've talked about this. And especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
So I am completely fine watching movies at home.
Right.
So like, maybe I'll watch like Dune on HBO Max. How long is it?
Dune on HBO Max. Dune is like 2.5 hours.
Mm, okay.
I mean, I would say like, yeah, I think it's going to be on HBO Max this week, like Thursday, I think actually it's going to be on early. I don't know. I mean, French Dispatch again, I'll be curious to see like when these hit VOD. And while I know that Fox has like old Fox had a deal with HBO, I wonder, will like French Dispatch be on Hulu? Like, Nomadland was, and will it be on pretty quickly? Like, it feels like it would behoove them to do that after like a few weeks, but I don't know what the plans are personally. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, because it's Searchlight, so
right. So it might have a different. What we're saying is the current streaming contracts.
This is so like inside baseball.
What is pretty difficult even to figure out for how you watch movies, but they're both playing in theaters this weekend. Joyce, anything else before we wrap up?
I don't think so.
What about Succession Response?
Succession Response. Oh my god, yeah, we didn't even talk about it last week, did we? But yeah, it came back this past Sunday.
Right.
Yeah,
did you watch the episode again?
So I've seen the first episode 5 times now, like 4 times, like via like the screener from the past month. So I've seen it 5 times now. I watched it this like the premiere because I wanted to see the new credits because the credits weren't ready on the screener. You know, right.
I was very pleased with the credits.
Yeah, very. Yeah, a lot of new like ATN, you know, Chirons there.
A look at Waystar Studios for the first time.
That's Waystar Studios. Oh my gosh. Right. What are they going to make? They're going to make a movie about Lisa Arthur, obviously.
Lisa Arthur movie. Right. Yeah. It's going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to win Oscars.
Yeah. I'm mostly pleased about like the, like to see how far this little show has grown. Cause I remember when season 1 was airing and like, nobody was talking about it. It was just like, like people have seen it, like, you know, like small group of fans and like critics and like TV writers. And then like season two, like it got more popular as it aired, but now it's just like full on and, you know, it got its highest ratings like across like all platforms. So yes, very excited it's back. And episode two has your, one of your favorite lines and then a favorite set of mine.
Great. kind of like, so we watched, I watched it again, obviously watched it last night. And yeah, it does a great job of setting up, what's coming in episode two, which is like all the Roy kids maybe coming together.
Kendall is trying to build his army still.
Right. So. I just loved it. This first episode I thought was really good. It's just so good. And I was really paying attention to this. Maybe one of the five times you watched it. I thought that Nicholas Britell did a lot of new score stuff. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah. He always like remixes
the theme,
like the themes of like the characters or like whatever. You know, and
I really, really enjoyed that, but remained delighted at good memeage from Greg. Just good, a
lot of internet lot is of, big. Okay,
a lot of memes. Good memeage, just the best.
It's oh my god! It's the funniest show on TV. Honestly,
that scene in the car is so good for so many reasons. But I love Kendall being like, feed me the metadata. He says so much nonsense, Kendall. It's just incredible, the stuff he says.
It was like, but then it was like that. And then like, also like later with like Lisa, he's like, when he just makes like the temperature and like weather analogy, I'm like, so dude. Good.
Love it. All right.
But one of my favorite things is also like how like both he and like Shiv said like I love you to like Naomi and Tom, and then like Naomi and Tom are just like, yeah, thanks.
All right, Joyce.
Yes,
it's great. We'll see you next time. This is fun.
Yes.
Okay.
Bye.
For all things Hollywood competition and award season, head to goldderby.com and follow us on social media at goldderby.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.